Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our second podcast. My name is Elizabeth Zhang, and I'm one of the transplant hepatologists at the University of California, San Francisco. And today I'm joined again by my colleague, Neem Ha, who is also a transplant hepatologist here at the University of California, San Francisco. And today's podcast, we want to focus on how important it is to have a multidisciplinary team in managing MASLD, knowing that MASLD is not just one entity, but a lot of different conditions combined. And then we'll also talk a little bit more in detail about the management of MASLD by Dr. Ha walking me through an example of a patient that we see in clinic. So, Dr. Ha, thank you again so much for joining us today. When it comes to managing patients with MASLD, do you often work with a primary care doctor or an endocrinologist? Do you find that a multidisciplinary approach is more helpful for you?
Thanks for having me again. I think that so MASLD is one of those things where we have a whole body condition. It's not just a liver disease, therefore a team-based care is, I would say, essential. And usually I think about as primary care providers, they have the toughest job. They see all these patients, they have different diagnosis and different complaints, and they're first really to screen, identify the risk, and really manage the overall health. And we have an endocrinologist, given that MASLD is more of a metabolic syndrome or a manifestation of, say, insulin resistance. So they're managing our diabetes patients. And then our cardiologist, given that high liver disease is the number one cause of complications, still cardiometabolic. They manage their cardiac disease. I would say where we and our role comes in is when our patients have a later stage in terms of disease damage, inflammation, fibrosis and worse cirrhosis or liver cancer. And we also have dietitian, given that the cornerstone that we talked about on the initial podcast is still weight loss and lifestyle dietary management. So I do think that given that the commonality of MASLD being the really the most common cause of liver disease and is closely tied to cardiometabolic disease or risk factors, having a multidisciplinary team to manage these patients and all get on the same page is very important. And while a hepatologist has really expertise in managing fibrosis, staging, and progression, the majority of MASLD really, I would say, starts in the primary care setting. And it really sometimes stays there unless they develop complications.
Okay, that's great. Because I want to further this conversation by talking about a case that we recently saw. So this is a 52-year-old man, and he has a history of diabetes for many, many years, and diabetes that has not been well controlled despite the best efforts of his physicians as well as himself. And it seems like he was recently diagnosed with MASLD because he has diabetes, and then he had an ultrasound that showed some hepatic steatosis. It seems like his primary care doctor, on routine screening of blood work, found that his liver tests were abnormal, and then got an ultrasound which showed that there is some steatosis in the liver. Do you typically see these types of patients? And if you do, what is your next step, particularly if the liver enzymes are elevated and there's concern for some degree of fibrosis in the liver?
Yeah, I think for these patients, this is not a untypical presentation. Most of our patients who present, again, most of the people don't know they have fatty liver disease until they develop, again, really abnormal liver enzymes, or some abnormal imaging findings. And for the patients who have just typical steatosis without any concern for advanced fibrosis, either based on, non-invasive risk scores such as a FIB-4 score, or the ELF score that we talked about in the initial podcast, or elastography-based imaging, I would say they can safely be managed in the primary care setting, in the sense that the majority is still lifestyle and dietary. However, for those with any concern for advanced fibrosis or maybe just intermittent risk based on those scores. It never hurts to confirm it with a second score. And if there is, then I would say that it's okay and encouraged to refer to a hepatologist, given that we may have access to different treatment modalities, registrational clinical trials, or even some of the newer agents.
Gotcha. So it sounds like for patients who have low FIB-4 scores, particularly less than 1.3, it would be okay to continue following with their primary care provider. But if there's any evidence of an increased FIB-4 score above 1.3, then there's some concern that there could be some fibrosis in the liver, in which case referral to a specialist might be beneficial, particularly with regard to pharmacologic options.
Yeah, and also like when it comes to also diagnostic uncertainties. So, I think that for our listeners, I say fatty liver disease is again the most common cause of liver disease worldwide. But there can be a lot of mass, other types of etiology can also cause fat in the liver, and it's really important to rule those out. And those can include viral hepatitis, or it can include genetic underlying inherited diseases such as Wilson disease. Or, autoimmune cholestasis. So I do think that if there's any concern or this diagnosis not making sense, that's another reason to refer to a hepatologist, because we may have resort or we need to have more invasive testing, such as a liver biopsy.
Gotcha. So this patient, this 52-year-old man with hepatic steatosis and diabetes and elevated liver enzymes and an elevated FIB-4 score above 1.3, was definitely rightfully referred to seek specialty care. So, do you typically then get a FibroScan, or how do you really work up the fibrosis stage when the FIB-4 score is high?
That's a great question. So I think a long time ago we used to resort in liver biopsies, and I think that we had liver biopsy was the cornerstone of diagnosing to stage fibrosis, because we didn't have enough other non-invasive data or modalities. I think that now in our kind of day of, our practice nowadays, there's so many good ones that we talked about on the initial podcast. So I would try my best to really identify the degree of fibrosis, in terms of which will also help me sort of counsel them, our patients, better, as well as determining position of these different agents. And for me, I would start with the non-invasive. So if I have access, depending on their clinical care setting or practice, a FibroScan is always the easiest one, just because you don't have to have the patient undergoing different imaging with radiology. You can do it in your clinic, takes less than 5 minutes, and we have such robust data in terms of different cutoffs to differentiate what's severe fat in the liver versus non, and also what's really early fibrosis and then advanced fibrosis, which is really stage three and above. So I try my best to identify fibrosis based on these. And if the patient doesn't have, or you don't have the access to FibroScan, then I think about maybe using an MRI elastography, which also has amazing robust data as well. And then following that, it'll be ultrasound elastography. And then if there's still gray areas where I'm unclear if the patient actually have fibrosis, like say, for example, if their platelets are low, but yet their imaging FibroScan is okay. So for those kind of situation, then I would resort to liver biopsy, or if there is like a diagnostic uncertainty. But for this case, it seems like the workup was done. The FibroScan would be the next step.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. Thankfully, this patient did not require a liver biopsy, but his FibroScan did show some concerning information. So, his FibroScan showed that he had a high amount of fat in the liver, so severe steatosis, and it showed that he actually had stage three fibrosis. And so, when we reviewed this information with him, he was obviously very, very concerned about the findings, and he felt very motivated to lose weight. Specifically, when counseling about weight loss, is there a certain weight loss target that you discuss with patients? And then, what if they can't get to that weight loss target? Do you then talk to them about pharmacologic treatment?
Yeah. So, I think that if the patient has now fibrosis stage three, I think the first thing is to, as the provider-patient relationship, is really to explain the severity of it, as well as give them some reassurance. Because a lot of our patients, when they hear fibrosis stage one, two, three, or four, they don't really understand what that means. And I would say that for him, being stage three, there's still a good possibility that we can prevent it from getting worse and then hopefully regress again. And the next thing I would do is really, I usually ask my patient what they want. So more very patient-centered approach, just because really the crux of the relationship between the patient and provider is really trust. And if his priority is really weight loss, then it will help me determine what's the positioning of, say, a GLP-1 or a GIP dual agonist versus one of our newer agents, which we'll hopefully discuss later, resmetirom. If his priority is to lose weight, then I will counsel him on the goal. Again, I think giving our patients identifiable goals with specific guidance is really helpful and empowers them. So when I say weight loss, if he has stage seven, I mean stage three, I would be more aggressive with the weight loss goal in 7 to 10% versus the 3 to 5%, just because the 7 to 10% has been really proven to really regress the fibrosis without worsening of the fatty inflammation in the liver. And then we would again go through about lifestyle. But if he had already tried it with his primary care doctor and now he's here with the stage three, I would be way more aggressive in trying to get him to lose the weight faster to hopefully prevent this disease from progression. And that's where the GLP-1 and GIP really comes in hand.
Yeah, so we actually did start him on a GLP-1, or actually his endocrinologist started him on a GLP-1, and that was really helpful in terms of weight loss, and he got to his goal weight, and his diabetes was much better managed. So in terms of metabolic risk factors, I would say he was completely optimized. And so then we repeated another FibroScan about a year after his first FibroScan. And unfortunately, it showed again that he had stage three fibrosis, but the amount of fat in the liver significantly decreased, but there was still some fat in the liver. And obviously, rightfully so, he's very concerned about the stage three fibrosis, and he's doing everything that he can to help reverse what he can in the liver. What do you do after that? After we've kind of exhausted a lot of options and optimized him metabolically.
Yeah, this is where the really positioning of these new agents really come in play. So, for our listeners, I would say it's not that the GLP-1s and the GIP, they are marketed really well for weight loss as well as mainly improvement of metabolic dysfunction, mainly diabetes, as well as some lipids as well. But still half of our patients or even say two-thirds still aren't able to how to improve the fibrosis. So the newer agent that was actually just approved last year was this new agent called resmetirom. And it acts as like a specific thyroid hormone receptor agonist in the liver, which really helps the liver to reduce the fat as well as inflammation and also the aka scarring. And also it actually improves the lipid metabolism. And for resmetirom, the trial that it got the FDA approved and being the first FDA to approved drug for at-risk MASH was actually, they saw about 52 weeks of this the agent. There was approximately 62% resolution of NASH, but also 51% reduction of fibrosis and scarring. I think that's really key. So I think for this gentleman, if he already achieved his weight loss, he already achieved his blood pressure goals, A1C goals, as well as LDL goals, then really the next step is how can we give him extra option to give him the best chance to go from stage three fibrosis to hopefully stage two and one. But then I would actually bring up now the resmetirom to be used in combination with the GLP-1 as well as the GIP, which is completely safe. Even in the trials, they had patients on combo therapy with resmetirom and the GLP-1s.
Well, yeah, that's amazing that this medication is available now, because even 5 years ago, we didn't have something like that in our toolbox to help reverse fibrosis, which is really what we're worried about and can lead to much worse outcomes. And so it seems like it really does take a full team of physicians to treat somebody with MASLD, between a primary care provider being able to screen and diagnose and adequately refer to specialty care, as well as very specialized management of metabolic risk factors. And then finally, the hepatologist comes into play. And now I feel like we're a little bit more useful too, because we also have resmetirom as an option to help reverse fibrosis. So that's great. I thank you again so much for your time today. We have more podcasts about MASLD and the future of MASLD. And so I hope that you'll be able to join us for our other podcasts. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.